The content of this recording is based on information available at the time it was recorded and is for informational purposes only. It is not an offer to buy or sell or a solicitation, and no recommendations are implied. This is not investment advice. The topics discussed do not necessarily reflect the host's views or those of the guests or RBC. Andrew Dunn is a portfolio manager with RBC Dominion Securities, who is a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund. No part of this recording can be reproduced in any way without the express written consent of Dunn Wealth Management.
Maybe you could tell me what you think is going on. And please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever. It wasn't brains that got me here, I assure you of that.
Capitalism, God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
It sounds like a get-rich-quick scheme.
Yes, thank you. You will get rich quick. We all will. All right, so raise your hand if you want to get rich.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of Know It All. I'm your host, Andrew Dunn. My conversation today is with Raj Lalla. Raj is the CEO of Evolve ETFs, and we sat down over Zoom to discuss cybersecurity in honor of October being Cybersecurity Month. I'm very aware that it is November. It took me a little bit longer than I thought to edit this podcast. Some parts are a little rough. So you'll have to give me a little bit of leniency, but practice makes perfect. Enjoy this conversation. If you do like this and you'd like to hear more episodes, let me know and feel free to suggest topics or guests that you'd like me to have on. I am open to those suggestions and you can send them to me via email. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Raj Lalla. Hey Raj, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for your time.
So I wanted to have you on because a topic that I'm really interested in is cybersecurity, and Evolve has a very good option, I think, for investing in cybersecurity through Cyber Index. So maybe to start off, can you just give us the lay of the land on the size of the cybersecurity industry, you know, the growth expectations and what it was about cybersecurity that made you want to build an industry?
Yeah, great question. Let's maybe start by kind of taking a look at the macro of the world that we live by kind of taking a look at the macro of the world that we live in today, which really helps kind of make the case for cybersecurity. So in today's world, we have about 20 billion devices that are connected online. That works out to be 3 per person on our planet. That number is going to grow from 20 billion to 75 billion in the next few years. So that's your phone, your watch, your iPad, your computer, your thermostat, your alarm, in some cases, even your fridge. Mm-hmm. We live in an increasingly connected world. Now, the purpose of this increased connectivity, of course, is to make us more productive and happier and more efficient. But there is a downside. The downside is we are producing a lot of data by being so connected. And as you know, data is becoming the most precious resource in our world today. It's become more precious, most people think, compared to gold or oil or something. So when you have all of this data out there, it means that there's a lot of opportunities for a cyber criminal to access that data. That's where cybersecurity comes in and becomes really important for all of our largest organizations, all of our government agencies, to make sure that they're building a fence around that data to protect it for each.
Yeah, that's something I actually thought about a few years ago, because I thought, you know, if I saw the advertisements for the new fridge that tells you what's in there at all times, and I thought, well, but if that's sitting on your Wi-Fi, you know, and you're not thinking about cybersecurity in your fridge, but that could be the way through your fridge that people get into your Wi-Fi network, right? So it's the interconnectedness of all of our devices, I think, is something that's a big driver of this. How do you actually build the ETF to encompass the cybersecurity space?
Yeah, so when we look at an area, when we're putting together a product, what we first do is take a look at, is there a long-term investment thesis attached to this sector, or in some cases to this strategy? I would say you can easily check the box for cybersecurity, because we all know that cybercrime is going to continue to grow. We're not going to enter a period where all of a sudden cybercrime has decreased because cyber criminals are making so much money, $25 billion this year alone from all of their attempted breaches that are taking place. So that's the first part. The next part that we will look at is how will a sector like this perform in different economic and market cycles? How will it perform in an economic expansion? How will it perform in an economic recession? Now, one of the challenges that you, of course, have is that with an industry like cybersecurity, you don't have 50 years of data to rely on because it's a fairly new industry. But you can actually look forward and take a look at how something, some sector like this would do in a recessionary environment. For example, if you are a bank that had a terrible quarter, it's not as though you're going to come back to shareholders after that terrible financial quarter and say, because of this, we've decided to reduce our spending on cybersecurity. You will say that you've decided to close some branches, reduce your headcount, defer some other initiatives. But cybersecurity is one of the very few recession-resilient areas of technology because there's a non-discretionary spend attached to it. So we'll look at the macro factors. The next thing that we'll do when we're building a product like this is we will take a look at the investable universe and what are we actually providing investors with. So great example, right? S&P 500, about 25% of the S&P 500 is tech-based. These big tech complexes, you know, the Facebook app, Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Netflix, Google's, Microsoft, many of them already have cybersecurity departments. They have a cybersecurity business to a degree, but it's such a tiny portion of their overall business. For us to put those stocks into our portion of their overall business, for us to put those stocks into our portfolio would really be diluted by all of their other businesses. And it would be disingenuous for us to call it cybersecurity. So what we do is we focus within our fund of companies that are purely categorized as cybersecurity. We work with an index provider called Solactive. They work with a firm called FactSet. You've probably heard of FactSet before. And they use a system called ARBICS, which is the Revere Business Industry Classification System. And basically what they will do is they will use a funnel within their classification system to get down to specific areas of cybersecurity, software protection, hardware protection. And we will take that entire universe of companies that qualify in those categories. We will layer in a couple of prerequisites. One, you have to have a minimum market cap of $100 million. Two, you have to have minimum average daily traded volume of $2 million. And three, we will cap position to dominate that index. And then we will take a market cap weighted approach to the portfolio and away you go. That's your index. Effectively, what investors get with our fund is they get companies that are clearly categorized as cybersecurity companies, companies that have a minimum market cap of $100 million. Today, that universe globally is made up of 53 companies that qualify. So we have all 53 companies in our fund.
So it's a pure play idea. It's like you said, it's not that Facebook has 2% of revenues from their cybersecurity division, and so you own Facebook, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And when you look at ETFs in the US, a lot of times in the thematic area, if you look under the hood, oftentimes you will see that they have a lot of the big tech complexes within their portfolio. And we want to give investors pure play. And one last point before we move on. So what in fact happens as a consequence of that is, for example, in our fund, out of our 53 positions, only one of them overlaps with the S&P 500 and only one overlaps with the NASDAQ 100. So when you use a fund like ours, most likely you're ending up getting exposure to companies that you don't already have exposure to.
Yeah, and I didn't know that exact stat, but that was one of the things I liked about that Evolve ETF was that I like the theme. I like that it's pure play, but I'm not just duplicating positions I might hold for another reason. And so it also gives us a little bit of a correlation benefit. You know, the sticking a bit on that theme, you know, one of the reasons I like ETF for this type of thematic investment, and it doesn't have to just be cybersecurity, we're talking about that today. And I should mention it's Cybersecurity Month. It's October.
Yes, it is.
We're talking right now. Yes, so this is timely. Yes. The reason I like the ETF for this is that what I also learned, and I've learned a ton, and your infographics are great for anyone that wants to jump on the Evolve website. They have really good infographics that explain the lay of the land. The individual companies, a lot of them do very company that's really good on sort of, you know, protecting your internal systems. There might be another company that you would hire if you've had a breach to do forensics on figuring out how it happened and who it was and what was actually stolen or compromised.
There's companies that specialize in internal threats, external threats, et cetera. And some of them are really exciting. Like there's some that are out there, you know, actively trying to chase down the newly developed hacking malwares, and you know, it's mm-hmm. sort of offense as your best defense. So I thought, you know, when that's the case and you can feasibly see a large company having a contract with maybe multiple providers for different reasons, there didn't seem to be one winner. There wasn't one company that did it all that you could just buy. There's certainly big guys like Palo Alto and some of the others, but there wasn't one that just encompassed everything. So I wonder if you can just, you know, highlight a couple of the names in ETF that people may in the coming years come across in the news and sort of what they do or how that process.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Many of the companies specialize in one area. I typically categorize the companies to specialize in one of three areas: hardware protection, software protection, and consulting. Those would be the three areas that I would typically, and you're absolutely right. The big Fortune 500 companies oftentimes will work with two or even three cybersecurity firms because they'll pick a company that specializes in one area and then they'll pick another company mm-hmm. that specializes in another area. So some of the companies that that have performed really well and have specific areas of expertise, Booz Allen Hamilton is probably one of our favorites. Booz Allen Hamilton exclusively focuses on consulting. So think about this. When COVID kicked in mid-March, we all got vaulted into a work-from-home environment, of course. Hundreds of millions of people around the world. Companies were clearly not prepared for it. Most cases, about 85% of the companies said that they were not adequately prepared, specifically from a cybersecurity infrastructure. So the first part was to beef up your infrastructure. The second part of it was to make sure that your employees know how to use all of these systems. Make sure they know how to do things like use dual level authentication or use your virtual private network. That required a lot of training. So an organization like a Booz Allen Hamilton is an organization that provides not just the consulting to the companies, but also the consulting how to properly train your employees to protect the data. Because it's one thing pre-COVID to protect all of your central data and your central servers. It's quite another thing to also build a fence around everybody's home mm-hmm. that's working from there, around their Rogers network or their Bell network, to make sure that the corporate data is protected. So that's one great example. Another great example would be Zscaler. Zscaler has done incredibly well over the last couple of years. They specialize specifically in areas of an alternative to virtual private networks. So they use something called zero trust network. Zero trust networks means that in order for you to move from one area of your systems data or your corporate data to another area, then you need to properly authenticate your ability to actually access that. And there's the old way of doing things was this castle and moat technology, and it kind of sounds exactly like it is. So castle and moat is basically, think about a castle, think about the moat. Once you cross that drawbridge and you've cleared your security, you now have access to the entire castle.
Any room, right? In the castle, right?
Any room in the castle. Whereas zero trust network is, once you want to move from one room to the next room, you need to authenticate your authorization to actually access that other room. So Zscaler has done incredibly well by being real leaders in that area of the market. They're also very, very importantly, they're also providing the cybersecurity work for Microsoft's Azure initiative. So Microsoft Azure, for those of you not too familiar, is their cloud computing division. And right now, I believe Microsoft controls about 20%. Almost 20, I think 18% of the overall cloud industry worldwide. The biggest today is Amazon Web Services, and Microsoft is number two. So in order to protect all of that data in the cloud, that's the job of Zscaler. And then one other example that I really like is FireEye. FireEye has done incredibly well, and you know, probably dovetails into talking about one of the biggest hacks. FireEye is the company that actually went in to clean up Equifax. So you're absolutely right. There's a great example of a company that has specialized in forensics. So I often use the analogy, think about cybersecurity a little bit like, there's a great example of a company that has specialized in forensics. So I often use the analogy, think about cybersecurity a little bit like your home. So you have a house, you get an alarm, you put the stickers up, And it's supposed to, the purpose of the stickers is what? To act as a deterrent. So a criminal sees, a potential criminal sees that you've got a home alarm system, so they're not going to come in. So think about it from a criminal's perspective and your own perspective. Hopefully your house hasn't been broken into, but you can appreciate this if it has. Your house ends up getting broken into, somebody trips your alarm or bypasses your alarm, takes whatever they want to from your house, and then leaves. The forensic side of this now is the police and the insurance company of your house, right? The police come, they try to investigate how your house got broken into, which window they tried to break through, did they pick the lock, so on and so forth. The insurance company comes in to do an entire evaluation of what was actually seen and what was actually taken. And of course you file your claim accordingly. Mm-hmm. After that all happens, what do? You maybe get a better alarm system. Maybe you buy a dog. And hopefully that does a better job of protecting your house. Cybersecurity is no different. You have a company like Equifax is a great example. They had terrible cybersecurity infrastructure, and so they got breached. And so a company like FireEye will come in and help them put back in place the proper technology and infrastructure to hopefully make sure something like this doesn't happen again.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about Equifax because it's kind of a cool example, but it also really made the news because the stock got hit so hard when that happened. That was a couple of years ago now. But I think as a segue to that, and kind of what you said a little bit there, was that, you know, there's a poll that, again, this is one of your infographics, you know, 352 national security advisors named cybersecurity, or they were polled as what's the biggest threat. 45% of terrorism was 26%. North Korea was 7%. Iran was 7.9%. I think, you know, the thing that gets me is I feel like we are just in the early inning of really understanding how big a threat this is. And it feels a lot to me. I mean, I grew up with, you know, Facebook was launched when I was in university. So I didn't grow up with a phone in my hand like new generation has, but I was early in it and I've been sort of distilled inside of this thing for quite a while. And I had no idea how it all worked until I started, you know, investigating it for investment. And then that turned into figuring out what to do with my own stuff at home and putting in personal protection. But you have North Korea and Iran and terrorists and China and Russia. There are state sponsored groups, and make no mistake, you know, we've got groups that go back at them. With that as the professional hacker out there, this is a lot like though when you had to stand up in front of Congress, right? It's like they didn't know what to even ask him about how Facebook works. And I think that's the thing here is that, you know, companies like Equifax, they're a massive company. And you said it yourself, like they didn't have good cybersecurity and they probably just didn't even understand what they needed. And I think that that's changing a bit, but that there's still quite a ways to go on that. And so maybe if you want to talk a little bit about the details of, you know, that is kind of considered the biggest one so far, at least the biggest one that we know of. You know, in the news recently, there's been the CRA and the Nurses College in Ontario. And there was if people want to Google something, there's a really great story about, I think it's in Texas, a sheriff's office that was hacked like 3 times in a row or something. But Equifax is the big one. So maybe walk us through, you know, what happened at Equifax and what the fallout of that was, just to illustrate the importance of companies paying the big dollars to make sure this stuff is in place.
Yeah, it's a great, great point. So I think, first of all, it's important to take note of a dollar amount. The amount of money globally that will be lost from cybercrime will be $6 trillion. Okay? Put the number into perspective. That's bigger than the GDP of countries like Germany and Japan. So start there. Next part is, you're absolutely right. There's not a week that goes by that you don't hear about a major breach. Not a week.
All the time.
Right? Yeah. If it's not a big organization, it's an agency or a municipality. Hospitals are huge targets for hackers because there is sensitive information, and hospitals, a little bit like Equifax, have not spent the money on upgrading their technological infrastructure nor their cybersecurity. So it's on a weekly basis I find that there's a new hospital that got hacked. But you're right, Equifax was one of the big ones. Garmin was recent, 500 million records got breached. They paid, I think, $10 million of ransoms got breached. They paid, I think, $10 million of ransom to get their data back. What's interesting is that what's great to see about all these ransomware attacks is that if you do pay your ransom, 9 times out of 10, you actually get your data back. It would be a really bad. But then they get you again, which is why you need to beef up your cybersecurity. But at least you do get your data back, because there is actually some honor among thieves. And the truth is, it would be a terrible business model for cyber criminals to take the data, get the ransom, and never give the data back, because you're going to have companies stopping from doing it. But Equifax, you're absolutely right, is a case study. And I'm sure that it has crossed every desk of every major company's CEO around the world. So they had 143 million records that got breached. This was actually 3 years ago, September 2017, that this happened. 143. Now, just keep in mind, you had companies like Yahoo. Basically, what was just taken was username and password. With Equifax, it was your name, your date of birth, your social insurance number or social security. It was your credit card debt outstanding. It was high quality data, highly sensitive data, that was actually taken by the cyber criminal. When they came out and reported this breach of 143 million records, their stock dropped 35%. Every CEO's worst nightmare, right? Because it gets worse than that. Your stock drops 35%, but maybe this is a bit of an overreaction and maybe your stock will recover. But here's the problem. Think about it from a Canadian bank's perspective. If that happened to one specific bank, well, you've now lost customer trust, right? So customers will, and customer loyalty, very importantly, customers will go to another bank and they'll probably never come back. All that money that you spent on customer acquisition, all of that time that you spent on building that trend that you spent on building that trust is gone with the snap of your finger. And that's the biggest reason why, if you hear CEOs speaking at events, we're not going to a lot of events these days, but online, and somebody asks them that question, what's the number one thing that keeps you up at night? It's a data breach. It's such sensitive information that nobody can afford to be displaced.
And people might not know, I guess I should clarify what Equifax does. Equifax, their business is data. So like if you have a credit card, if you have a credit card, your information goes to Equifax, and you know, I mean, I'm not going to go off on this tangent, but I don't remember ever signing anything to agree to work with Equifax, but they have all my info because I have a Visa card. But the I think, right, you know, the Equifax is a data business, but 80% of the value of Fortune 500 companies, most of them, is intellectual property. So if you have, like you said, if you have a loss of trust, if you have someone inside the vault, so to speak, that's a massive hit to your business in the moment, but then also going forward. I think you're 100% right there. One of FireEye's businesses is the one that went in and cleaned that up, and you mentioned FireEye earlier. I think the size of the hacks and the amount of data that can get spilled out is one thing, but the way that they work, I think we should probably describe that, is the computer generally will be locked up somehow, or the files will be locked up, and they'll get a notice that they need to pay a certain ransom, and usually, or not usually, always, that's in Bitcoin, because you can't trace Bitcoin. So you would send your Bitcoin to a Bitcoin account that no one can ever find out who has it. And then from there, they can spread it all over the place and do whatever with it. And you have a deadline. And if you pay it by then, like you said, the business model is that you actually release the files so that the next time you do it, people believe you and they pay. And if you don't, then your files are either leaked or they are destroyed, or their files are either leaked or they are destroyed, or they're just locked forever. And so you lose all of your data. And so in a way, because there is a real lack of understanding, by the time it happens, it's too late. As far as I know, there's not a company that can come in and you'll break the hostage scenario. It's either you have the
very difficult.
Yeah. What the companies are told, I understand, is when it happens and they call someone, they say, well, pay the ransom, get your system back, and then we'll help you with making sure it doesn't happen again. But once you're there, you're paying that ransom. So it's a case where I think the more it is in the news and the more it's happening, the more companies who it has not happened to yet are going to be rushing to make sure everything's in place so that they're not the next story. And, you know, this, I think hacking used to be rogue teenagers doing something for fun, or people thought of it that way, or it was, you know, your grandma being tricked by the Nigerian prince who wants to get his 40, tricked by the Nigerian prince who wants to get his 40 million out of the country, and she has to send him some money, right?
Sure.
But now it's not really so much an individual thing. It's like you said, it's corporate hacking. And then there's also the other side of it, which is corporate espionage. So North Korea and Russia and Chinese teams stealing information, whether it's about vaccines, whether it's about, you know, proprietary technological information, whether it's infiltrating military stuff, or then the big thing that people have talked about for years is the age of the infrastructure in the U.S. And, you know, they're talking about infrastructure spending now, finally, whether they actually get to it or not, we'll see. But one of the things that has to be updated, along with the physical infrastructure, is the protection so that somebody can't get in and shut down our power grid or shut down our internet, right? And so I think there's so many places where spending has to increase and continually increase for cybercrime and cybersecurity that, like I said, I think Rex is a great way to play it, because you get the winners in all those different areas, because there's not just that one winner that's going to be out there.
If I could add a couple of points here, I think you're spot on with it. And, you know, you're absolutely right. The WannaCry's, the Petya's, the not Petya's of the world, the ransom requires people to pay it and then fix it up later and make sure that it doesn't happen again. And your point on terrorism is really important as well, because you have bad actors that are part of nation states that are trying to access data. And if you remember, most of your listeners will probably remember as well, although it's a distant memory because of COVID, at the beginning of this year, everyone was very concerned about the tensions between the US and Iran. And the view was, for most people, was that this was not gonna break out into a physical war. This was gonna potentially break out into a cyber war. And what was happening in the cybersecurity world back then in January and February was many companies and government agencies were focused on beefing up their overall infrastructure to make sure that they were properly protected.
Yeah. And even on the outgoing side, you know, it's interesting because we just last month passed September 11, and that was terrorism, right? Was, you know, flying planes into buildings. But, you know, this is an outgoing example, but there was a virus that was used against Iran with their nuclear program. And these can actually cause physical damage. They can overheat machines, shut things down, break things. And it's all done from the comfort of a bunker or a basement or something somewhere in your home country. And, you know, there's people think that might have been the US or it might have been Israel or something, that this can cause monetary damage, but they can also cause physical damage through this. And so it's kind of the new, you know, we still have missiles and aircraft carriers and everything that are out there, but this is one of the new ones, because it's also very difficult to prove who did there. But this is one of the new ones, because it's also very difficult to prove who did it. And so this is it's something that we want to defend against, but it's also low hanging fruit for any terrorist groups that have the savvy to be able to figure this out and get in. And so I think,
well,
you know,
it goes back to the point of data, right? Yeah. Because data has become our most precious resource. It's the thing that's most difficult to protect. And you're absolutely right. And this is where we get into beyond bad actors trying to make money for themselves. We have government espionage, things like that, that really delicate issues related to breach air for all of our companies and agencies.
Yeah, I think definitely. So I think that's all I wanted to cover. Raj, if you have any closing comments, or do you want to wrap it up? And
yeah, there's two comments that I would like to make. You know, it's oftentimes when we're talking to people about cybersecurity, we hear the comment that, wow, that's great. You know, it sounds really interesting, but maybe it's just a little bit too niche-y. Well, I think it's important to actually know how big the cybersecurity industry is. Right now, the annualized revenue is about $160 billion. Let's put that into perspective. That's the exact same size as our entire Canadian banking sector. And it's about 40% bigger than our Canadian real estate sector. I am not in any way suggesting to anybody that they should have as much exposure to cybersecurity companies as they do to Canadian banks or Canadian real estate. But I think that that helps kind of put into people's minds that this is not a tiny, niche-y sector. It's actually quite a bit bigger. So that's one point that I'd like to make. The second point that I would make is that cybersecurity is actually one of the only areas in our world today that has a massive shortage of human capital. It is the only industry, one of the only industries that has negative unemployment. So right now there are 3.5 million job vacancies in the cybersecurity world worldwide. So for the listeners that have kids at that age that are trying to figure out where their career path is going to go, you may want to nudge them towards cybersecurity, because they got a high probability of getting a job in it. But the reason why that's important from an investing perspective is because of that shortage of human capital, most big companies, most banks, most government agencies outsource the lion's share of their cybersecurity work because they can't staff it up enough internally to manage all of those potential cyber threats. 75% of all the work that's performed for our Fortune 500 companies and government agencies, 75% of the cybersecurity work is outsourced. And guess what? If you're a big company, you're probably not going to outsource your cybersecurity work to a small mom and pop shop. You're probably going to want to send it to a big regulated. And that's why, you know, when we're telling potential investors, advisors, that's what makes a great case for a fund like this, because the companies in our portfolio are the ones.
That niche, it is from the perspective of it's one idea, but it's not from the perspective of if you believe Amazon's going to get bigger, if you believe Facebook is going to get bigger, if you believe people are going to keep using banks, if you like Visa and have Visa stock in your RSP, paired beside every one of those is cybersecurity. If you like defense stocks, cybersecurity, right? If you like, you know, imagine all of your data, like I just redid our insurance not long ago. There is sensitive data on me and my family at Manulife. Right. I want to make sure that they have that protected. And if anything happened there, you know, I might, and Canada Life said, we have a better system for protecting your personal health data. I might decide to go over to Canada Life when I renew my policy, right? So I think, you know, cybersecurity is ubiquitous, but yes. I think that's funny enough, people don't really understand that yet. And I don't just mean investors. I think even to some degree CEOs and that. So I know we get a ton of emails and we have testing, we're all aware and we're all watching. And, you know, personally, you know, my team has caught a couple of attempted, you know, hacks and email hacks for clients. And that's because of the stuff we have in place to make sure that doesn't happen. But that's becoming more and more important. And you have to be more and more aware, both from a personal perspective, but then also from the perspective of anyone you're giving data to, you know, the question is going to start to have to be asked about what's in place, or probably more importantly, they're going to have to just start offering it up in the first place.
It's going to become more and more difficult to decipher a message that you're getting from somebody, whether it's legitimate or whether it's a potential hacker. You know, really quickly, you know, they've gone from this spray and pray approach to trying to breach data to being very targeted. We've had three attempted breaches on our system where the cyber criminal has actually gone onto our website and identified me as the CEO and figured out the email addresses for all of the employees in the company and sent them an email. Pretending to be me, asking them, telling them that I urgently need an Apple gift card or an Amazon gift card, which, you know, difficult to trace those. Can you get it for me immediately? And obviously taking advantage of the fact that employees usually want to satisfy their employer and they'll bend over backwards for it. I'm very fortunate to have one employee that is not very tech savvy, and he was the one that caught it because the email said, hi, I won't say his name, but hi, so-and-so, I need you to do me a favor and go to the Apple store and get me a gift card. I need it for a customer event. And so the employee called me up and said, hey, Raj, I got an email from you. Do you know what time the Apple store opens up?
There you go.
So I said, what are you talking? Change your display name, right? So this person changed their display name to Raj Lala. Yeah. It would require you oftentimes, depending on the Outlook service or the mailbox service you're using, to scroll over the display name to see if the actual email address was mine. And otherwise you wouldn't even necessarily notice it. So great example. And that attempt has happened three times. And I know it's happened with a lot of other organizations as well. There's actually a great Cisco YouTube clip on something like that, which is the anatomy of a hacker and how they actually do it. So yeah, you got to be really careful, and it's going to become more and more difficult to make sure that you're protecting yourself.
Yeah. And I guess for people who, I mean, maybe the next natural question, and we can end on this, that people listening might be thinking, well, what should I do on a personal level? You know, my opinion from everything I've looked into, and I'm far from an expert, but I've certainly learned a ton in the last couple of years into it, is, you know, on your personal devices, you know, have some sort of software protection, whether it's Norton or Panda or ISIS, have some sort of software protection, whether it's Norton or Panda, and it does, as long as you have one that's there for malware and for scanning, for all of your social media accounts, using two-factor authentication, making sure you're using, email accounts that maybe are divided, that you have different passwords and you have different email accounts, sensitive information, maybe shopping and everything, so that if one gets hacked, all of your stuff isn't in there. And then for your browsing, using a VPN or a service that provides that anonymity on your, when you're browsing the internet. And then of course, and I feel like most people know this, but this happened to me 2 years ago, when you're going through an airport or you're sitting in a coffee shop or whatever, turn off your Bluetooth and your Wi-Fi. Don't use those networks. Even if you have to put in a password for the network is not secured. And there are people in there. That's a popular place for individual hackers to go to try to wreak havoc and enter people's software systems. And I, Toronto, a couple of years ago on a conference, phoning my wife Darcy saying, go on my social media accounts and look and see what you see. And apparently I had gone into the business of selling sunglasses Instagram. There were like five or six posts and someone had hacked my Instagram, and they had also actually contacted a couple of my friends, and a few of them had messaged me, and a couple of them were upset because, some of the things that happened weren't, they thought, why would Ange say that? And it wasn't me, thankfully. But so I had to shut everything down at like 11 o'clock at night, Toronto time, figuring out how to delete Instagram, which is a whole other thing. But the, that happened. Yeah, the only other thing I did with my phone that day was have it in my pocket as I flew from to Toronto, got a cab to the hotel. So it can happen to anyone, and so you just have to be cautious, and I think more cautious going forward.
But I tell people, I think you're absolutely right. I tell people all the time, don't use public Wi-Fi. Just get a better data plan if you're short on data. It's beyond the Bluetooth and using the public server. It's also, you have hackers going to those public spaces and setting up their own server that they want you to come onto. So for example, you'll have hackers going to Starbucks, sitting outside Starbucks and setting up a new server called Starbucks One. Right. Now, when you go to look for available networks, you see Starbucks and you see Starbucks One, you just decide to click on Starbucks One. You've now given an entry point or a gateway to a cyber criminal. You're absolutely right about dual level authentication. Use your cell number, fingerprint, use an alphanumeric password with a symbol. All those types of things are super important. And for heaven's sake, if you get an email from a bank that you don't bank with that asks you to click on this link to verify your account details, don't do it. And even if it is a bank that you bank with, make sure you go and look at the actual email address that you that it came from. That's the absolute key.
And
I've seen way too many people fall for those phishing scams. Yeah.
And don't buy Raj Apple gift cards under any circumstance.
Yes, don't. Yeah. You'll never get me asking you for it. So that if you get an email like that, it's fictitious.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much, Raj. It was nice talking with you.
Thanks, Andrew.
Last name?
Dunn.
Is that your name, or are you telling me you're finished talking?
Both.